Check, check, still working. Can you talk real quick?
Check, check, check.
Yeah, you're still working.
Great.
Think it works? Let me get a little situated here. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Try not to look ridiculous.
Welcome to TikTok Theology, a podcast that tackles the major trending topics on social media that concern the Christian faith. I'm Megan.
And I'm Steven. So today we are going to talk about one of the biggest, most divisive things in our country and in our church, and it is politics.
Yeah.
This is going to be a two-parter, okay? Because this is a rich conversation that we're going to have.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
But we're going to, basically the debate is Republican Christian versus Democrat Christian.
Because they both exist.
They both, it's already fighting words, just the title of it. It's already fighting words, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So tell me, why should, or I think we can kind of tell why it's so prevalent in social media, but why don't you just go ahead and let us know what's going on?
I mean, the talk of the town has been social media, politics, all of that for years and years and years now, but especially I think since 2016, it has been a really, really interesting conversation.
Super divisive.
Super divisive. And just like, I mean, Christians are just as divisive as anybody else when we're talking about politics and we're talking about these kinds of things.
Yeah.
So social media has been absolutely divided. Like even since we recorded this conversation with our lovely, amazing guests a couple months ago, like so much happened and changed politically that everyone on both sides, I've seen think pieces from pastors. I've seen think pieces from like advocates. I've seen think pieces from both sides. And so it has been an insane environment for us all to be in on social media, which is where we've seen it, but obviously in our churches and in our schools where we work and things like that. But I mean, we have to care about politics.
Yeah.
I mean, we may not have to be like the politicians if we don't feel called to that, but politics is important because that affects everybody. It affects how we live.
Yeah.
And so obviously we've seen a lot of conversations about immigration, which we touched on last season, money being spent, military being deployed, budgets, healthcare, like all
it's
of
everything.
These things, everything. Everything. Yeah. It touches everything that like the Lord cares about, honestly.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's really important for us to have a conversation in these forums about how Christians can fall on both sides of the argument, but how to continue to pursue the Lord over our political party affiliation.
Yeah, putting Jesus first before anything
100%.
Else. 100%. Also, I think 2016, when you mentioned that, is specifically, it's intriguing because it wasn't just our politics in the U.S. It's also Brexit. And
there's a lot going on.
Yeah, you can watch all these documentaries and stuff. Like, this is when people started using social media like real heavy for politics.
Yeah.
And so obviously it was used before, but not in the same way. I mean, it was like masses in droves.
Oh my goodness.
And trying to get people that have never voted before on both in England and in the U.S. And so it was a major, major factor. Like before that, Obama kind of won with a grassroots campaign, just kind of going through. But like Trump won 2016 with all of that, but also like major social media influence.
Yeah.
But it also, I mean, it paved the way, it opened the door for a lot of misinformation. I mean, from inside our country and from outside of our country.
Oh my goodness.
So you have other countries trying to determine how our voting things go. And I'm sure this happens for other countries as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like, it's just like a free for all.
Yeah. Well, cause the 2012 election, Facebook had been around for 4 years. Like
really? No.
Yeah. 2008 was when Facebook was founded.
Started?
Yeah. So you're talking about 2016, the social media really wasn't even
like a thing.
A thing when the 2012 election. So 2016 is when people really started to have conversations on social media and started leveraging, which is funny because we've seen a lot now, is that to have a social media platform is part of the campaign process. Like presidents, governors, senators, mayors, like everyone is on social media.
They profile themselves.
Yeah. So it became like such a new tool in 2016 that now it's like you will not find somebody running a political campaign that doesn't have a social media presence.
Yep. Makes sense. So before we get into who it is, like our guests, which are great guests.
You guys are good.
It's really, really great.
Yeah. We will bow out of this conversation to facilitate some people who really know what's going on here.
So we're like, not only do they know what they're going on here, it's just like, you know what? We're not going to go into the lion's den and just kind of like start slapping around some lions. We're not going to do that. You know what I mean?
Good.
We're going to let others bring this conversation. We will referee it. You know what I mean? It'll be great. But I do want to talk about this book that I read that was really good that I highly recommend, Boom, right there.
Boom.
And it's called The Myth of Left and Right, How the Political Spectrum Misleads and Harms America by Hiram Lewis and Verlin Lewis.
Those are great names.
Great names.
Also, we said this one right here because, team, we're on video now. Yeah. So if you want to know what Boom, this book is,
there you go.
You can go and watch these on YouTube now. Yeah. And you can see what we look like. Yes. And you can see all the things we're holding up because we're about to get real prop heavy now that you can visually see us.
That's right.
But these great names, what have they written in this book?
So they are political science brothers.
Nice.
And they wrote this book. It's such an interesting thesis. And I'm like totally convinced. I think they're totally right. Came out with Oxford University Press. It's super short. I think it's on Audible. Like, y'all can check it out. But yeah, like, it's really, really good. Highly recommend it. And it helps, gives us insight of like our problems with in America, and probably abroad have similar situations too.
I'm sure.
But their argument is this: the left and the right doesn't actually have ideologies that are coherent and consistent. So like, we think that like, oh, well, I vote Democrat or I vote Republican because I like the values of the Republican side or the Democrat side. And so basically you think that you're getting onto it because of the ideology that is from that side.
Right.
Well, they're saying that the left and right don't have coherent and consistent ideologies, that they shift over all the time. And it makes a lot of sense. They cite like so many examples. Like, think about this. Is it Republican or Democrat, and you can answer this, to care about the environment?
We would say that's probably Democrat.
It's probably more Democrat, right? Like, that's kind of how it's viewed.
Yes.
Obviously, there's Republicans that care about the environment.
Of course. Democrat,
like, that exists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the first champions of it, one of the first environmentalists was Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Republican president.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the national parks, all that kind of stuff, like he was the champion of that.
Yeah.
And so that was a conservative cause that turned into a progressive cause.
Yeah.
And so that's just one thing. Right now, the Republicans are becoming more isolationist. They don't really want to have a whole bunch of like neoliberal trading between, countries and like international systems and stuff like that. It's part of the tariffs. It's part of all this kind of stuff. The dialogue that's going on. Trump is more of an isolationist president. He said for a long time that he was never going to go into war. And then obviously that changed.
Has occurred recently.
Yeah, he bombed Iran.
Yeah.
But that's kind of an isolationism. Whereas in the past, Reagan and Eisenhower, they're like set up a lot of these international trade situations that we got. They were neoliberal globalists in a lot of ways, and those are Republicans.
Yeah.
And so, and then who's the party that's more warmongery, would you say, like according to social consciousness, not necessarily true, but like what do people assume? Republicans,
I do feel Republican.
Republicans seem to be that's the social zeitgeist.
Yeah.
But Obama was super duper militaristic.
Oh yeah, he dropped a lot of bombs in the course of his presidency.
And drone warfare like really kind of like took off with Obama. So so the point is, it's not left or right. They shift and change all the time.
Yes.
Somebody he even argues, people will argue, conservatives try to conserve things from the past, progressives try to move forward to the future.
True.
But that's also not true.
No.
Both of them try to conserve the policies that they want.
Correct.
And both of them try to progress into
the things
areas
that they like.
Yeah. So this not even, so there's a, so he thinks that this is a myth. This is a something that's not true. And he argues, and I think this is so interesting.
Yeah.
The way people vote is not because they look at the values and then they go to the party, but they go to the party and let the party determine its values.
Yeah.
In other words, he thinks that we are tribal. I totally think people are generally tribal.
100%.
Totally different conversation for a different thing. But he thinks that we take a tribal mentality for that. So like we're part of the left tribe or the right tribe. And then the right considers what are the values in this specific area, or left considers what are the specific values. And those values change and shift over time. And they even have differences now. Like a lot of Trump's policies in the right go against a lot of libertarian policies that Paul Ryan in the past, even Elon Musk, he has a lot of more libertarian leanings. And that's why you see a lot of the straight up beef that's happening between them and the bills.
On social media.
On
because,
spending.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Oh geez.
We're back again.
Yeah, talk about social media fighting.
Yeah.
That'll
do it.
That was crazy. So, so he thinks we have this tribal identity with the left and right. And then we just are like, go through it. And there's been all these studies where like, you'll have like this group.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be like a group of conservatives or a group of liberals. And then you'll say, hey, what about this policy? And they'll say, like, to the conservatives, a liberal policy. And they'll say, this is something that this conservative politician has put forward. And then the group, the focus group will be like, oh, I like it. It's you know, it's because it's doing this, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They did the same thing for the left. So they were like, they were like, hey, what do you think about this immigration policy? It was a little tough.
Yeah.
And then they said, this is something that Democrats are putting forward. And then they were like, I like it. You know, we don't want open borders, but yeah, we just want just justice. Whatever. But it was a Republican policy. That
right.
Saying.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, they're not critically thinking through these policies. They're just saying, like, what is the tribe saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then let me go from there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of crazy.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Do I feel like honestly, if a lot of our policies were presented blindly, like that we had no idea who presented what, like I actually think it'd be a really, really interesting way that things would play out in Congress, in like even in the public. Because I feel like if we were just receiving policy and people had no idea who put it forward, people had no idea what party affiliation it was with, like I actually think things would go a lot different.
Oh, yeah.
Because we'd be like, we would take the policy for what it is.
Yeah.
And then we would like read it and be like, okay, like take it on the merit and not so much on who brought it forward.
That would be ideal.
Like, I feel like that would be, I mean, no one's going to do that, but I feel like that would be a massive win because we would be going in voting on policy. And I think we would, as was said in the study, like we'd be surprised how much we actually do agree
with both sides.
Yeah. And I think that actually like, I know that feels like a weakness for some folks where they're like, oh my gosh, I could never agree. If I'm a Democrat, I could never agree with a Republican. If I'm a Republican, I could never agree with a Democrat. But yes, you can. And honestly, like my dad says this, I'm sure he got it from somewhere, but he's like, all extremes are dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like both extremes, if I'm so far right, I'm so far left, I think are actually literally not doing, they are doing us a disservice.
Yeah.
Because they are so extreme.
Mm-hmm.
When really the reality is like somewhere in the middle, integrating both sides, integrating both ideologies is actually somewhere we need to rest.
And also, like just knowing the situational differences, like you might vote more conservative in an area that it benefits conservative policies and more progressive in an area that benefits progressive policies.
Yeah.
For instance, should you use tax money on transportation around towns? That to a rural area seems like nonsense.
Yeah.
Of course, why would they do that?
Yeah.
Everybody has their own car. There's a few roads, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. I'm driving my tractor to work.
Yeah, like you don't, you just don't need it. There's literally no need for it at all.
Right.
So they're just giving money for something that is not
serving
needed.
Them, yeah.
That is absolutely necessary for highly dense cities to have that. That's a lot of people live here. They need to get around.
People have been begging LA for better public transportation for oodles of years.
Because there's a billion cars on the roads all the time.
All the time, and we all want to cry.
And they do a good job. I mean, honestly, like I go to other states and stuff like that. For as many cars that drive on LA, like I commend them for actually like having movement. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like it's not nothing.
No.
It's not stop and go.
It's not.
Yeah.
But I'm even from like Florida. They've been I'm from Florida, and the absolute worst road in the history of the world is I-4. Three lanes on both sides and
stopped.
1 billion cars. Like you're waiting forever. I heard my dad was saying that they like fixed it up a little bit, but like, man, it's so bad.
He's like, hopefully that's true. But even like in New York, they've been like, clean up the subways. Like we use these things, like give money. Chicago, the same thing. So it's like, that does make sense, but you understand that people do have their quote unquote rights to vote towards the thing that they believe would benefit their communities. But then if we were communal, then we would be like, oh, we want the 9 bajillion people that live in LA County
to be able to move around,
even though I'm from rural Nowhereville, Norco. Like, I'd love or Northern California, like, I would really, it'd be really for the best if I voted for something that was going to massively benefit 9 million people that live in Los Angeles County.
And that's a reason why a lot of Republicans prefer having state laws that are not federally mandated. So, and because I think they recognize how different the states are.
Correct.
But
they are like 50 little countries to be
honest. Right. But then you have like really, really dense populated big cities.
Mm-hmm.
They want federal funding because the state funding may not be enough or whatever.
Right.
And so, so basically that's what it is. And so like one of the big problems is that we have 50 states and we have 50, it's like having 50 different countries.
Yeah.
We're bigger than Europe. You know what I'm saying? And those are all different governments and economies that are going.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so the fight happens like that. And so just having a sense of like realism and recognizing that even in Idaho Republican is going to be very different than a Florida Republican. It's going to be different than a New York Republican. A progressive from the Midwest versus California versus Hawaii. Like those are all going to be very different.
Yeah,
and they have different needs, different things. And and I think that's kind of like people are not cognizant of that,
yeah,
and therefore not real gracious towards each other,
yeah,
because of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if we understood that, then maybe we would be like, okay, I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
So we need to figure out a way to help you and to help us.
Yeah, I would agree.
That would be good.
That'd be cool if we could think like that.
You know, when you said if we just had the stances without like the party affiliation, mm-hmm. that reminds me of John Rawls's book. He wrote a super important book called A Theory of Justice, one of the most important political philosophies of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, he had this idea that of a veil of ignorance. Have you ever heard of that?
I have heard that, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll just recap it. The idea here was like, to build a good society, and it's Kantian, so it's based on like Kant's idea. Yeah. He's trying to like give it a way to function.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a veil of ignorance, and then we put everyone behind it, and so that stripped away all of our differences. So like gender,
race,
you know, sexuality, whatever it is that's a difference, mm-hmm. like it's totally gone.
Yeah.
And so here, as completely, utterly, totally neutral people, yeah. totally gray, can you decide what would be best for society?
Yeah.
And then whatever decisions you make there mm-hmm. would be kind of those like really neutral positions that yeah. are not benefited from a tribe or something like that.
Right.
So it's kind of like that, I think.
Yeah.
But I think their response here is to go granular. They were like, hey, instead of thinking of like a giant, you know, like, oh, this person's a conservative or this person's a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk about the actual positions. Because yeah. I know for me, like I'm on both sides on certain things.
Yeah.
So like, so I'm an independent and mm-hmm. So I'm not either.
Yeah.
And I am on both. And I became an independent because I realized how I wasn't on both sides on everything.
Yeah.
And so they say to go granular, say like what positions you support and what not. You yeah. know what I'm saying? Like, oh, this person doesn't like free trade or global yeah. trade or whatever. This person doesn't like this. This yeah. person is pacifist, so they're not going to be for big budget and yeah. military or whatever. They say what it is as opposed to saying, oh, well, they're just liberal or this conservative.
Yeah.
Because you can't really define someone like that.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's good to have these conversations that we're going to be having over the course of this season is mm-hmm. like, it does make it real. Mm-hmm. Like we don't just write people off because yeah. I feel like that's what we do is mm-hmm. like, oh, I write everything that an opposing party says mm-hmm. off because I feel like they have a stance that I don't agree with on such and such thing. And I get that it's hard. Like if someone was a Republican, they're like, I want to throw out everything this Democrat says because they vote pro-choice.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like, if they're a Democrat, like I want to literally never listen to a Republican on anything because they want, you
like
know,
a
more
issue.
Yeah. Like they, because Republicans have decided that, you know, Christianity like matters and such thing. Like, mm-hmm. so it's like on both sides, I feel like we write off entirely because we know that they maybe agree on one thing mm-hmm. that we've been like, that's not anti-God or that's anti like gospel or that's whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like the reality is, and as we said a lot last season, was like, this is the kingdom of the world. Nothing is going to fit bar for bar, word for word of what we would want a kingdom mindset, a kingdom politics yeah. to be. It's yeah. just not going to be what it is.
Nope.
And so these moments where we get to welcome guests who do, they are both in relationship with each other. They have their own podcast,
yeah.
like they're friends. They're yeah. actually friends and yeah. they do life together, but they do have very different political opposing mm-hmm. views. How do we not just coexist, mm-hmm. but how do we co-labor
yeah.
for the kingdom?
That's good.
Even on these two different, very different sides of a political spectrum.
That's good. Listening to them a little bit, they have given each other leeway through genuine discourse.
Yes.
And so like the problem is we can't even have discourse, so there's no leeway. But yeah. because they are in relationship, like as a friendship, mm-hmm. and respect each other, yeah. respect each other's differences,
mm-hmm.
like they come, they're like, oh yeah, you're right here, or you're right here. They give each other a little bit of give,
yeah.
right? So let me introduce who they are. So we have Josh Bertram and Will Wright of the Faithful Politics Podcast.
Incredible.
Super cool podcast. They get all sorts of people.
Yeah.
Like they, like all sorts of views, and they just like have a really good conversation. They're such a cool duo because Josh is a card carrying Republican and Will is a card carrying Democrat,
mm-hmm.
and they come from those positions. Josh is a pastor and Will, I'm not sure what he does, like he didn't say it, but they're both Christians for a long time, yeah. devoted, love Jesus,
yeah.
Coming from completely different backgrounds of like what brought them to their points, and we get into that question a little bit.
Yeah.
So So it's I'm excited about it. I was on their podcast too, promoting The Problem of Promise of Freedom,
yeah,
which I can point at y'all and be like, y'all should check it out. That was a cool thing. And that's where I met him. And I was like, hey, would you guys want to come on this podcast? So it being our first like major debate of the season,
yeah,
I think is
good start.
It's apropos. It's really awesome. I think you guys are going to love them.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and tune into that.
Well, Josh, William, thank you so much for being with us today. We are so excited to have this kind of conversation that we hope sets a precedent for the kinds of conversations Christians should be having always. So we're going to kind of hop right into this with like an opening question. We'll start. Whoever wants to begin, please feel free to pop in. But what are the main reasons you have chosen to be a part of and remain in your political party affiliation?
You know, I think that's a great question. And one of the answers that I have, and it may not be that satisfying, but I think it's pretty true, is that I basically grew up in the Republican Party. I mean, my parents voted Republican as far back as I can remember. I remember having a lot of conversations about, you know, Bill Clinton when I was young and and his immorality and the Democrats and this and that. And I'm not sure that they said that. Like they were never like, you shouldn't care about these people. They were not, it wasn't like they didn't have compassion, but they had very strong moral convictions, my parents, about it. And it seemed like there's some moral clarity in it. You know, we had an understanding that abortion was an ungodly thing. That was kind of the idea. Mm-hmm. Some of the issues, of course, now through the LGBTQ issues have become even more pronounced, way more pronounced than I remember them ever being in the 90s when I was young. I mean, again, I wasn't like following politics or anything. I'm not saying they weren't there. I know they were, but it wasn't like this huge issue. And even, you know, then I think it was President Clinton that signed in the DOMA law. And so it wasn't like this Defense of Marriage Act law. So it wasn't like this big, issue back then. But as I got older and I got into college and then after college, I started getting really more involved in the politics. That's when Obama first became president. I graduated college in 2008. And so Obama, that's the year he was elected. And we were working, you know, I had mixed feelings about Obama. I didn't really have like a negative feeling. But then I would listen to a lot of right wing, you know, really conservative hosts and all that. And eventually, like, I got this sense that, man, this, I felt like the Republican Party was my home, for lack of a better term. And, but then as I was working through that, you know, I always felt like I needed to keep my faith like separate from my politics in some way, right? I never felt like it was really okay to just put the two of them together.
Yeah.
And, but I will say, man, during the Obama era, I remember when Obergefell v. Hodges, when they announced they would not defend the DOMA, like when Obama administration announced that they would no longer defend, I don't know, some section of the DOMA, right, that defined it as between a man and a woman, when they basically, I remember the White House covered in a rainbow after the decision was made, and I felt shocked by it. And it was such an emotional reaction. I'm not saying it was the rational reaction. It was an emotional reaction, though, and it was very strong. And I remember kind of getting into this more and trying to understand the philosophical defense of marriage, trying to understand the biblical defense of marriage, trying to really dig into that, because I felt like I was very ignorant, didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. And I felt like my views on like traditional understanding of sexuality, gender, and all that were becoming increasingly disallowed in the public square. Now, it's interesting, of course, in the context we are now, with the aggressive way that Donald Trump has been, you know, reversing those policies at like light speed. It's interesting because you're like, I'm almost taken back a little bit because I almost got used to it. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but it was kind of like, oh my word, like he's going real fast on this. And probably, you know, 10 years ago, I would have been super happy about it. Now I have mixed feelings about it. My views on gender, my views on marriage, they haven't changed, but the sense of how do we work this out in a country that isn't Christian, although it's majority Christian, I get that. But, you know, it's not like it's not a theocracy. It's not a country that has where we're saying, hey, the Bible is our law. We're not doing that. And I don't think we should. I know that's another another argument for another time. We can get into it now. But I really felt like this really deepened sense of like, man, I really, the Republican Party is where I belong, especially in the Obama years. And then when Trump came along, and I know that'll get into the next question of what's good and bad in the party, but it's like when he came along, I had a lot of worries, a lot of concerns, but then I essentially voted for him in 2016 because he was Republican, but because of what I felt like was at stake in terms of the Supreme Court justices that were going to be, and I felt like, you know, for the most part, he put in justices that would align with my values. Now, if I look at the two party platforms, I seem to align more economically in different policies with more with the Republican than the Democrat, although there's obviously, you know, exceptions there. And I would probably call myself more of a libertarian now, feeling a little bit more alienated in my own party than I ever have, if I'm completely honest. And listeners to our show, that's not going to surprise them. I've said that many times. If anyone listened to this has listened to our Faithful Politics podcast, but that's kind of where I'm at. There's more, but I'll stop there. Let Will respond.
That's good.
Yeah. So, the question, excuse me, the question was, what are the main reasons you've chosen to be a part of and remain in your party affiliation? So I want to preface what I'm about to say by saying that in our, you know, two-party duopoly we have here in the United States, that it's important that people choose a party only because there's power in numbers. The only reason people, you know, really should be a part of a political party is to be amongst like-minded people that will hopefully vote the same way you will, so you can enact change. That's kind of like the thing in our representative democracy, right? Is that alone we can't really, you know, change legislation, but a group of us could. And because of that reason, that's the reason that I belong to the Democrat Party. Now, we're in Virginia. You don't have to register. Like, I know you all are in California, different rules there, born and raised there, so I totally get it. But here in Virginia, you go to the polling place and they ask, do you want a Republican or Democrat like voting sheet? And then you pick and then you go check whatever boxes you want. But I have always voted Democrat, although there were a few elections where I split the ticket, primarily for state level stuff. But I've been a Democrat for, gosh, as long as I can remember. And like, and my parents never really were into politics. So this wasn't like, I didn't inherit like my Democratic, you know, I don't know, ideologies or mentality or philosophies or anything like that. These are just things that I kind of figured out for myself, that I think that these are policies and whatnot that help me. So as I alluded to earlier, you know, I was born and raised in California. I went to University of California, Riverside. And, you know, I didn't really think of it in terms of like liberal college, you know, although now like maybe it is a liberal college. I mean, but like I did come to learn the things that are important to me through my college experience. And the Democrat Party at the time was the party that seemed to deliver the most for the things that were important to me. And just like Josh said, you know, it's funny actually to hear, Josh, because I never heard that story before about Obama. Like the Obama election was probably one of the most exciting elections. It was the first election I ever voted in. And it was actually the first election my wife and I voted in because of just the significance of it. I mean, here I am, a Black man that was raised in kind of the Los Angeles County school district system. Mm-hmm. I had a teacher when I was in third grade tell me that I could never be president because I was Black. Wow. And then here it is, this you know, Black person running on the Democrat ticket. Now, if you had asked me, you know, whether or not I was a part of the Democrat Party, I don't know, like 100 years ago, I would have said absolutely not, because the Democrat Party's changed. I mean, much like the Republican Party's changed, right? The Republican Party of our fathers and mothers or whatever is not the same Republican Party as it is today. You know, I would go as far as say that holds true for the Democrat Party, because, you know, when the great realignment of the political parties took place in like the 70s, I mean, you know, basically Democrats all of a sudden, you know, got really, really excited about social justice. But it's not because that the party itself all of a sudden became very altruistic, you know, and philanthropic and wants to actually help man. They did it because that's where the voting bloc was. Mm-hmm. And much in the same way, I think, with like the Republicans, it's like, you know, what the Republican Party looks like 20 years from now may be completely different. They may actually be the ones that are like promoting CRT and asking for DEI, you know, like,
yeah.
and at the rate that the Democrats are going now, it's like, they're going to be the hawks, you know, be like the Reaganites of like, hey, we want more war. We want more, you know, KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, you know, in the Middle Eastern countries and whatnot. So, so I am a part of the Democrat Party as it is today, and yet to be determined if I'll still be a part of it, you know, a decade from now.
All right. Yeah. Those are really nuanced answers, and I think most people probably have a little more nuance than we want to think when they talk about what they're voting for and what they want. One of the issues is letting parties define you, and I think that is very uncomfortable for a lot of folks. But then some people just kind of get caught up. And I think what I'm hearing from you guys is more of a critical sense of like, yes, I'm aligning more to this party, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to be critical. And I think that's actually really, really important in today for Christians. You know, like, can we view this party as some kind of a non-final thing that can lead towards maybe more justice in our society, at least to what our visions are, but they are not God's justice. They are not that you know, eschatological vision for our shalom, you know? So
absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that's really, really significant. And you guys are very clear eyed about it. You know, just, even like Will, when you're talking about like the shifting in your party and you don't know if it's going to be forever. I like how, not allegiant you are to it, you know, and like, and the same thing with you, Josh, when you're like, oh, I've never felt so displaced or far away than now. So like, it sounds, it sounds odd, but like, yeah, I like how you guys are willing to hold your own parties accountable. And when they don't line up with what you feel like is according to your faith and your person, like who you are, you're willing to say peace. And I like that, you know?
Yeah. Can I make a comment, Stephen?
Yeah.
I mean, I think what you said is so appropriate and so true that we have to be critical of our own allegiances in the political realm. And I think that is the same. We have to be critical of our own views and our own understanding of the world. I mean, I don't mean critical as in the bad way that people talk, well, you're being critical of me, stop being so critical, you know, just trying to nitpick and find things. That's not what I mean. I mean looking at it and really saying, is this reality? Is this true?
Yeah.
If I go through the different, you know, positions that if you look at the party platforms, and the different positions that they have, you can find things that you like and dislike in both. Yep. There's no doubt about it. And the trap that all of us are in is that we are faced with a binary choice, essentially. Mm-hmm. We can vote. There are more than two on the ballot, but there are only two that get any real substantial attention.
Yeah.
So it's essentially a two-party system. And we're faced with a choice where we have to find, that forces you to find the issues that are most important to you, and then basically make a choice that's validating all the other issues that you may not agree with.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you're forced to do it because you care about abortion. You care about immigration. You care about LGBTQ rights, or you care about, you know, LGBTQ, like trying to figure out how to live together, and you have a traditional view of marriage or whatever it is. Like, all these things matter, but then you're forced to make a decision that is going to include things that you don't necessarily agree with. I don't necessarily really like what's happening right now with immigration and the Republican Party, the way that light speed at which it's going. Now, I don't know why people are surprised, because Trump essentially, I think, has been saying he's going to do this. Like, this is what they're going to do.
He ran on it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, but I guess maybe we're like, oh, he's just saying that. But apparently he wasn't. So it's all that to say. Sorry, I don't want to get sidetracked on that right now. But I just, it's so, we just, it's so insidious, this like, hey, you're either in one of these two things.
Yep.
And that's what defines you. And we have to resist that.
Yeah.
I think to restore sanity.
By nature, it is reducing us. Like, it's by nature. If there is a binary, and I'm not talking about like in sexuality or other things, you know, like it's a completely different conversation. But if there's a political binary, you're on this part of the classical liberal left, or the formerly classical liberal left, and this part of the right, right? And but we already see other sentiments bubbling up, post-liberal sentiments bubbling up. And I was thinking, you know, 2016 seemed like an inflection point. A lot of people seem to be over liberalism. The Republicans put up a populist vision, a post-liberal populist vision with Trump. Yes. The Democrats were like, Bernie Sanders was leading the way, and he had a post-liberal vision. And then kind of the Democrats liberal machine just like squashed that and propped up Hillary Clinton, which was more of status quo of their former neoliberal policies and whatnot. And so that was an inflection point. And now we've been, it's weird. Like, I think one of the reasons we feel so much unrest is because we're waffling back and forth between, are we going to continue to be a liberal country, or are we going to be post-liberal? And then what is this next vision of post-liberalism, you know?
Totally. And right.
So with that, like, in mind, not historically, but today, what's good and bad about your party? And so this is a more difficult question, I think, because when we say what's good, we look back at, like, you know, Republicans look at like Reagan, or they look at like all the way back to like Abraham Lincoln, even though we can, you know, Will will talk to us that like there's a little more flipped in sentiments of what was going on back then, right? But like we'll look at all these other people, or, you know, Democrats will look at Obama, who's basically like the greatest spokesperson for neoliberalism, I think, from the left. And but that's not where we're at, right? We're not at these points today. So what do you think? And Josh, you're already getting into this a little bit, so I guess you can finish the thoughts and then we'll go to Will. But what do you see that your party does or focuses on that lines, like today, that lines up well with the Christian faith? And what does it do that does not line up with the Christian faith? And so I think for the latter, you were talking about immigration. But if you want to maybe like zero in on that and focus particularly today.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I was thinking about this because I'm the faithful host. So politics aren't necessarily my thing. You know, I do look into them, but, you know, Will reads like all the original like laws and all the reports and I'm like, I don't know. I just don't have the energy or don't have the motivation to do that. I'm so glad he does. I'm like, ask him all sorts of questions about, well, what does this mean? And he does the same thing for theology stuff for me. But like, so let me say this. I do think that the Republican Party gets it right for the most part on protection of unborn life. I do think that that's a major thing for me. The idea of anything like late term abortions, the idea of anything that would be like that would take parental like involvement in a minor, you know, who's facing a pregnancy. And I understand there's all sorts of extenuating circumstances. So this is by nature going to simplify things, right? But I think that like I'm trying to imagine, I have two daughters. I'm trying to imagine one of my daughters having an abortion without my knowledge. Now, I don't have statistics on all of that, right? This is, so forgive if this is an oversimplification or, right, of that. But I can't even imagine that, like trying to work through that and how difficult that would be. I would want to walk through them with them. And so I do think they get it right on unborn life. I do. I think they have gotten it right on religious liberty, although I'm more skeptical now. And I think that there is an emphasis, and this will kind of go into both. So I'll just say I have appreciated the defense of religious liberty and freedom of conscience in the Republican Party. But that's a caveat that I'll get to when I'm talking about things that are bad right now. I do think that personal accountability, order, like a strong justice system, the defund the police, that was very concerning for me. Although again, the nuances of all that, oversimplification, I have to keep saying that because I understand that there are injustices that have been done by the justice system, and those should be corrected without a doubt. And I do think that there is racism that's kind of baked in to a lot of our systems. And I become more convinced of that just because of human nature. And I think that those things need to be seen, called out, and corrected without a doubt. I think the affirmation of marriage and the importance of family in local church, I think it's crucial. I think the family, I think there's a lot of confusion right now in a lot of areas that's creating a lot of confusion around the concept of a family. Mm-hmm. And as a Christian, I think a family is a core part of the biblical message of how God kind of designed societies to work, with the family as the smallest microcosm of work and of learning and of formation and all that, and then growing out from there. I do think that they're getting that right. I think for the most part, I'm a free market guy. I think less government intervention is normally better. So, and again, this is all from their platform, by the way. I was reviewing that before I came in here. Right, platform versus actual doing it, right? The actual implementation can be different, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I think that those, and I could go on, but those are kind of the areas where I feel a lot of agreement. If you guys have any questions, by the way, or anything, you can interrupt me and ask.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I think I think it's very helpful to see that, because I think some folks from the left or the right listening to other people, they may not see the appeal to the other party. Like they're like, oh, this other party is just like, they're doing this. And they look at all the negative things. So like just seeing a general vision for what it is that draws you towards it, I think is really, really crucial.
That's great, man. And I'll just go, through these bad where it falls short. I think that the Republican Party in particular under the leadership of Donald Trump has become, much more hateful, I think, in language and using things like evil. And I'm not even addressing Democrat, right? I'm just focusing on Republican right now. I'll let Will address the issues in the Democrats. But I don't like the language that's used enemy, evil, you know, that this cosmic battle that essentially is being grabbed onto. I think they can be tribal and harsh towards immigrants and towards LGBTQ individuals. I do think that can happen and has happened and does happen right now. Yeah. I think that we prioritize power over virtue many times. That we're, it seems to me right now a party obsessed with power and obsessed with having what it wants and forcing its vision on other people, what I'm seeing right now. And I think that Trumpism is what I'll call it, and I'm going to separate Trumpism from Trump, but Trumpism, I think right now it's a kind of political messianism where he's the Messiah and he's going to come in and he's going to save everything. And that, it blows my mind. It's mind boggling to me to treat anyone like that. That's coming in here. And it's very concerning. And I think that we're using a lot of the tools. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say the Republican Party is the party of Jesus and falls away of Jesus. I don't think that's true. I think they throw some things out there that they know their voting bloc likes and wants. But I don't think they consider Jesus very much in any of the policy decisions that they make. I just, from where I stand, I'm willing to be convinced otherwise, by the way. I truly am. I've been trying to actually find things that I like about Trump and find things that I want to, like, I've been looking for them, and I'm open to that. I have mixed feelings on him. But I don't see a lot of repentance. I don't see a lot of humility. I don't see a lot of concern. I see a lot of power grabbing. I see a lot of people being sycophants, and just catering to whatever this strong man in power is doing. And I think that does not bode well for the future of the party or this country.
Let me ask you, those
things concern me.
Let me ask you, quickly, we don't have to get super deep into it, but what does Nikki Haley during that check more boxes for you of what you were looking for as a Republican leader? Or is there
to be honest with you, I'm probably a little bit too ignorant of Nikki Haley and what she's doing to even answer that question.
Okay.
Cool. To be honest, like, I wish I had a better answer.
Fair enough.
So fair.
No, I think she,
I'd love to know why you said that though. If you can help me understand, that'd be great.
I think she actually seems to stand for more of the things that you were talking about. And even in her rhetoric of how she was approaching things, not in a hateful way, but just in like a, hey, I disagree with these policies, but we're all Americans and this. Like, she seemed to align a lot like with how you were talking about it. And she seems to be like kind of, she seems to be more in line with like the Romney McCain kind of Republican Party, as opposed to
definitely a Romney McCain kind of guy, I think.
Yeah. So she seems to be in line with that. Whereas Trump is populist, is really a different vision of conservatism that we're starting to see. But I was just curious about that.
Josh, I really love, hold on. No, Josh, okay. I really love that. Like the heart of what you're saying about how, like, I don't feel like Jesus is necessarily endorsing your party. And I think that that's like a really important thing for all of us when we're having this conversation, is like to fundamentally and respectfully disagree while understanding and holding that Jesus does not endorse either party. And I think that is what has made political conversations get really messy, because there is a belief for a lot of people that Jesus is a Republican or Jesus is a Democrat. And so how, like, I think it's really fantastic to make that differentiation and to make sure that we are saying, hey, there's good and bad, and Jesus probably has a heart in a little bit of both of like what we would want for people in the States, especially, but based on what we believe in as a faith, as a person of faith in Jesus. So I love that differentiation. Yeah, so I'm really thankful that you said that.
Yeah, indeed. I am also very looking forward to Will. How would you answer each of these questions as well? What does your party do that lines up well with Christian faith, and what do you think it does not?
So there's probably going to be a theme for my answers to both of these. And the theme will be Democrats are a big tent party. And what I mean by that is that if you think about the composition of the Democrat Party and those that vote with the Democrat Party, you've got, you know, folks like Bernie Sanders, who is independent, but does caucus with the Democrats. Mm-hmm. But you also have, you know, a lot of diversity. You've got members from the LGBTQ. You've got, you know, like more Black senators in the Democrat Party than you do on the Republican. Actually, I don't know if the Republican, Tim Scott left. So I'm going to have to come back to that. I don't know if Republicans have any Black senators. and if they do, I'm going to be super embarrassed. But, you know, so you've got this political party where people are part of a lot of different communities. You've got like gun-owning Democrats. You've got people that are, you know, like really, really focused on the border and immigration. You've got Democrats that are pro-life, you know? So when you've got a party that's this big, it's hard to try to figure out, you know, who essentially gets the food, basically.
Yeah.
So on one side, it being a big, big tent party, I think is a positive. Because in that, you're going to see, you know, an emphasis on diversity. You're going to see an emphasis on activism. You're going to see an emphasis on social justice. And I think all of these are really, really good things that the party I belong to, you know, do well. Mm-hmm. Now, when you start thinking about the bad things, like I'm not going to sit here and say that the Democrat Party is, you know, God's gift to politics or anything like that, because that's not true. Although it's harder to kind of find things that they did wrong when the Republican Party clearly has the Trump factor, and you're like, oh yeah, Trump, he's the reason everything's bad, you know? Like, but the Democrats do bad stuff. I mean, like, probably the number one thing that irks me the most, this isn't necessarily tied to Christian faith, but I'd be remiss if I didn't at least point it out. Democrats are really bad at politics. I mean, terrible. I mean, they are experts at pulling defeat out of the jaws of victory. You know, nobody does it better. And I think that has worked against them on a lot of different things. I mean, if you think about like just the first impeachment of Trump, Nadler never called up Trump and, you know, to testify. And I thought that was a real big mistake, because like his reasoning for it was, oh, it's going to take forever. It's like, who cares? Like, at least like show that you're somewhat interested. But they didn't do that. So, you know, being very bad at politics, I think is one aspect about the Democrat Party that I don't necessarily like. Another thing that I think Democrats could do better, and this actually does tie into Christian faith, is I think Democrats could be a little bit more sympathetic to religious freedom concerns. Mm-hmm. You know, this really came out during the, you know, the pandemic. And it's like, you know, I believe that everybody should have gotten the vaccination. That's just kind of where I came from. I had a sick child at the time, so I was just really, really like careful about where we went and if people there were vaccinated. And when it came to the you know, discussion about closing churches and, you know, church people getting vaccinated, I was not a Democrat that sort of dismissed those concerns, because I think that there are legitimate concerns. Like, I think that if you are a church and you've got a worship service and you've got a community and, you know, you've got the establishment clause and separation church and state, like, I really think that governments, specifically Democrat ran governments, could have been a little bit more sympathetic to what they're going through. You know, I think at a national level, I think, you know, Christian churches were sort of viewed as, oh, why don't they just get the shot? Or why don't they just close? Or why don't they just, you know, do Zoom church or whatever like that? But really, like, if you've been in a church, you know, like there's a lot of moving pieces. Sometimes it's feasible, sometimes it's not. And Democrats could have done a much better job. I mean, I'm a Christian. I'm a Democrat. We just stayed home anyways, even though we were going to a fairly decent sized church, but it was just the best thing for us and our family. Didn't make a big deal. I think the church went to eventually close, but yeah, Democrats could definitely be much better. Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
So in that, do you think, and I don't know if you were going to lead to this, but a criticism I hear often is that Democrats seem to like point their nose up to other people and almost like shame them into certain thinking a certain way. So like the emphasis would like your religious freedom concerns, like Democrats would basically make you feel bad about that. Like you are not caring for other people, or like you don't care about the lives for other people, or something like that. Do you see that? And I know that this is something that happens on both sides, but this is, I think, has historically been more of a condemnation of the left, that they are more of the moralizing towards the right.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably some level of truth there with one caveat that, you know, the question initially focused on my party. The original question focused on party, what they do, good or bad, and then your question sort of focused on individual actions. And I want to sort of divorce the two just for a second, because like being a bad person is bipartisan, right? So like you can have a bad person as a Democrat and a Republican. So now people that belong to each of those political parties, you know, may do stuff that is kind of blown out of proportion that becomes very representative of that particular party. Mm-hmm. I think you alluded to some of this even in our interview and in your book, you know, where it's just like we live in a society now where if I told somebody I'm a Democrat or progressive, we'll say, they are already going to have in their minds a sense of the kind of music I listen to, where I get my coffee, the kind of car I drive, you know, and like the politicians I support. Mm-hmm. You know, all of which could be true, but we sort of put these people in these categories because it makes it easier for us, right? Because it keeps us from having to get to know them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, do liberals actually make people feel bad for their faith? 100% yes. I used to be one. I was an atheist. I've been an atheist longer than I've been a Christian. So mm-hmm. I was one of those people. Like, and I was a Democrat. Does that mean all Democrats do that? Absolutely not. But you know, I think it would be a true statement to say that, you know, there are some Democrats that do make people of faith feel bad. But I wouldn't want to paint the entire Democrat Party, because there are plenty of Democrats who are believers.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's good.
No, I would add one more quick thing about the Republicans.
Yeah.
But I am very concerned with the lack, it seems like a lack of real honesty about the issues of the environment right now, and how crucial it is that we're figuring, like we're understanding our impact on the environment and we're taking action to mitigate. I do think we kind of throw that off. And it seems like right now the Republican Party, at least the people I've known, are more susceptible to conspiracy theories about any number of things. Anyway, I just thought, you know, I would really love to see the Republican Party focus a little bit more on how do we really figure out clean energy and how to, like, I don't know why that has to be a partisan thing. It just seems like it's kind of, unless I'm missing something, right? And that's always very possible. So just throwing that in there.
Yeah, it might be, Will would be able to talk a lot more of this, but the support, you know, like the oil companies supporting historically, you know, Republicans have been maybe making that conversations like slow down, you know, because I think sometimes it has to do with financial decisions, and not sometimes, like often it has to do with like financial situations. What do you think, Will? Do you think that might be part of it? Or
yeah, I mean, private businesses are going to, you know, latch their tentacles or whatever, or like what's that little fish, like a femora, I think it's called, or it's something like that latches onto the sharks.
Remora?
Yeah, remora? Yeah. I think it is remora. And like there's like the symbiotic relationship, right? So like the shark gets clean and this remora gets fed, you know, or something. And I think a lot of private businesses, for good reason. I mean, whether you're a big or small private business, you're like, hey, what political party is going to serve the interests of my company and my employees the best? And
right.
You know, right now it seems like the Republicans kind of have the market on, you know, the oil industry, and
yeah,
for whatever purpose, the oil industries are going to keep going to the well to get fed and, you know, hydrated as long as the well is still on and working. Right. But all of that could change in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. You know, like at the rate we're going, if the Republicans do something so bad that all of a sudden the oil companies are going to the Democrats to get help with the promise of, hey, let me make some donations to your campaign, you know, can you help us with this stuff? Then all of a sudden, like, the Democrats might be the party of oil, you know?
Yeah.
We could let everybody keep going over the course of this season, probably for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. But we're doing everybody a favor this season, and we're chopping things into two episodes, mm-hmm. So that you can have a break.
By the way, I want to like commend us.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
I love being commended.
During the Zoom, we didn't like interrupt a whole lot. We let them talk. We got our own opinions, but we let them talk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were saying some real good stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we are yappers by trade at this point. Mm-hmm. Podcast hosts. They are podcast hosts. So if there's something we all know how to do, it's talk.
We could be talking for years.
Years and years.
Yeah.
So this is going to be the first half of this conversation.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we'll pick it up.
We're super excited to pick it up next time.
Yep.
But I mean, come on. This is so good. I think half of the argument, or the battle, honestly, is like, do we do honest self-reflection of ourselves and the parties that we're a part of?
Yeah.
And I think what they did such an excellent job of doing is identifying maybe what is good that they love, which is why they chose the party that they chose, but also being really honest about how that they don't serve everything correctly. Like, they don't do everything perfect. They don't love every aspect of being a Republican or being a Democrat. And I think that that's really important for us to hear.
Totally.
And we should hear more often.
Totally. They have admitted their tribe, but they have a good critical space.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to critique their own tribe. And I think that's such a crucial point of what we're talking about.
I agree.
Yeah, the rest of the conversation goes really well too. So we'll pick that up next week.
Hi, friends. Thank you for listening. If you like this episode, please go ahead and like, subscribe, share the podcast wherever you get it, on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and spread the word about TikTok Theology.
The best way you can help us is actually by sharing the episode. If you liked it and you know someone that would benefit from it, please share it with them. Our heart is to help people navigate these difficult issues in these really hard times. We'll see you next time.
See ya.